It's the morning show on the Ideas Network. I'm Carrie Kaufman. Wisconsin is 12th in the nation in its treatment of children, but our next guest says that number is a little bit deceptive. Wisconsin treats white children really well, not so much Black, Native American, and Latinx children. More to the point, says our guest, the Kids Count report undercounts the number of children in Wisconsin, and he says it's going to get worse. Ken Taylor is the executive director of Kids Forward, a Wisconsin affiliate of the N.E. Casey Foundation, which does the National Kids Count Project and aims to advance policies that benefit all children and families. Ken, welcome to the program.
Good morning, Carrie. Nice to be here.
So let's talk first about what the N.E. Casey Foundation is measuring with its Kids Count program.
Right. So the Kids Count program has been around for about 30 years, and it's a look on a state-by-state basis of the well-being of children in each state. And the way that they do that is that they look at 16 different data indicators in four different categories and look at how well a particular state is doing on that, and then they combine all of those into an overall ranking. So they've been doing that for 30 years, and as you noted, this year, using that methodology, Wisconsin was ranked 12th.
Have we always been ranked among the higher states?
We have been. So last year we were 12th again. The year before that we were 13. And so for me, the actual number ranking is not the most important thing, because that can fluctuate a little bit based on what, you know, some particular numbers. But what is important for me is the overall sort of high, middle, low tier. And so Wisconsin is a top-tier state when it comes to the well-being of our kids overall, and has been throughout its history with Kids Count. And states in the upper Midwest and states in the New England area tend to be those that are ranked in the upper tier. And then states across the South and into the Southwest are states that are more challenged when it comes to the well-being of kids. Mm. As you noted, even though we're ranked relatively high, it does mask some of the challenges that we have that I know we'll talk about.
Let's get into that then. So what are the challenges that we have?
So the big challenge that we have is that the well-being of our kids is not evenly distributed across all races and ethnicities. And so this particular data report doesn't go into that on a state-by-state basis. There was another report that the Casey Foundation did called Race for Results that does that in more detail. And then Kids Forward, 5 years ago, released a report called Race to Equity that really went into that in great detail. Mm. And so for example, one of the sentinel indicators is the level of childhood poverty. And so the poverty rate in Wisconsin is quite different when you look at race and ethnicity. So we know that overall we have a relatively low poverty rate. But it's much lower for white kids than it is for kids of color. So, for example, African-American kids in our state it's nearly 50% is the poverty rate for African-American kids, 40% for American Indian kids, nearly 40% for Latino kids, over 20% for Asian kids, and about 10% for white kids. Mm. And so the fact that we have these huge disparities in child poverty based on race and ethnicity is really problematic for us. It's never okay for a kid to be poor. We know that there's long-term negative impacts of that. And the fact that they're so disparately affecting different kids is very troubling. And those numbers translate into virtually any data indicator that you would look at.
Yeah, that's true.
The absolute numbers, overall, we have about 200,000 kids who live in poverty in Wisconsin, and that number is holding steady, even though the economy, we're told, is rebounding. It's not positively affecting kids in poverty, and that number is holding steady.
So I want to look at the indicators that the Kids Count Project looks at, economic well-being, family and community, education, and health. Is there any one of those that Wisconsin is really, really good at that offsets some of the ones that we're not good at?
Well, all of these things are interconnected. The highest ranking that we have is actually in the numbers that we were just talking about in economic well-being. And the lowest ranking we have is in health. And so all of these, it's a fairly complex interconnection. And, you know, being number one or number two in one thing isn't necessarily going to offset, you know, deep challenges in others. That said, there are things where we do fairly well compared to other states. And so we should celebrate those things and build on them.
Okay, so what do we do fairly well? And the next question, of course, is what do we don't do well? But what do we do fairly well?
One of the things that we do fairly well is in high school graduation. So we have one of the higher proportions of kids who graduate on time, and that has historically been one of the highlights that we've had. We're slipping a little bit compared to other states in recent years, but that's still something that we do quite well, and we should continue to do, and we should continue to invest in our education system so that that number stays high, because we know that there are important positive impacts of kids who graduate from high school. We know that it's not just about the economics, but we do know that that kids who graduate from high school make more money on average, about 40% more than kids who don't graduate from high school. So that's one thing that we do fairly well, but we need to continue to invest more.
So here's my question. Do we do early childhood education well, and is that what's making the high school graduation stay high?
Well, historically we have, but recently we've been having some challenges in that. So there isn't an early childhood indicator that that really speaks to that really well. But what I will tell you is that historically we used to invest a lot more in early care in education, and the state's investment in that has declined. That hasn't necessarily, because there's 10 years between that and high school graduation, mm-hmm. that hasn't really started to show up in high school graduation yet. But we're very concerned that it will over time. And so we know that we're a hardworking state. Lots of folks need child care, and we're investing less in it. It's expensive for everyone, and it's particularly expensive for low-income folks. And so that was part of the deal in welfare reform. If people would go would work, then the child care would be subsidized. We're pulling back on that subsidy. In fact, subsidy rates have been frozen for a decade. And so that's one of the things that we're really concerned about. And it's also really hard to be a child care provider. Many of them are on public assistance themselves because they get paid so little. And they're taking care of our kids and really helping them learn and be successful in the future. And so that's one of the things that we really need to take a closer look at and really step up our investment in.
Ken Taylor is the executive director of Kids Forward. He is talking to us about the Annie Casey Foundation's Kids Count Report, which comes out every year. We're taking your calls here, 800-642-1234. What do you think that we need to do to make life better for kids here in Wisconsin? What do you think of the Kids Count Report? 800-642-1234. You can also email us at ideas@WPR.org. So we talked about what we did well, Ken. What are we not failing at? I don't want to use that word. What can we do better at?
Right. So this next data indicator is a combination of those things. So it's both doing well, but we could do better at. So we used to be a national leader in the proportion of our kids who had health insurance. And so that's something that we were proud of, and we were top five state as far as the proportion of our kids who had health insurance. That proportion in Wisconsin has held steady over the last 6 or 8 years, and the rest of the country is passing us by. So something that we used to be a national leader in, we've now become very average at. So things haven't gotten worse here in Wisconsin when it comes to this, but in the rest of the country, things are getting better and we're not keeping up. And so that's another thing that we're really concerned about, and we know that we could do better at. And so it's not so much that we're bad at it, but we're not as good as we could be, and everyone else is getting better and we're not. So that's something that we're concerned about. So I was just going to shift to another data indicator, but if you have a question about that.
No, go ahead. Shift to your other data indicator.
Yes. So the other thing that I wanted to talk about is around fourth grade reading. And so that's in the education section. And that's a really important indicator because we know going into fourth grade, those early grades, one of the main educational points is to learn how to read. Subsequent to that, kids are reading to learn, meaning that they're teaching themselves, they're reading textbooks, things like that. And so we know that if kids are behind in their reading at the end of third grade, if they're not reading proficiently, they're going to struggle in future grades educationally to keep up with their peers. And so one of the things that we're really concerned about is we look at that number and we find that two-thirds of our kids in Wisconsin are not reading proficiently in fourth grade. And so that actually is parallel to the national number. So this isn't just a Wisconsin challenge. This is a national challenge. And in an information economy where learning is so important, education is so important, you know, we're talking about things that feed into success when it comes to high school graduation and beyond. Early learning is one of those things. Fourth grade reading is another one of those things. And so the fact that two-thirds of our kids aren't reading proficiently is very troubling. And that goes back to the issue around early learning, because we know that we're not going to fix this reading issue by just focusing on second or third grade. We need to focus earlier. And so the investments in early learning are particularly important for that.
We are talking to Ken Taylor. He's the executive director of Kids Forward. We're taking your calls about what you think Wisconsin does well or needs to do better. Are you a teacher or a healthcare worker? What are the challenges that you see in your students or your clients? And how do you try to help them? What are the biggest issues that are facing kids today? Talking about the Kids Count Report. We'll do some more of that when we come back. It's The Morning Show. It's The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. I'm Carrie Kaufman. The annual Kids Count Survey is out, and some of it is good news and some of it worries our guests today, both because of what's in it and because of what's not. 800-642-1234 is the number to call for you to talk about what you think the state of kids is in Wisconsin. Are you worried about your child going to school? Are you worried about the education that your child is getting? Do you think that education differs depending on where you live? 800-642-1234. You can also email us at ideas@wpr.org or tweet us at WPR Mornings. Ken Taylor, we're talking about differing outcomes. I want to talk about the census because you have said that there are a lot of kids who aren't counted.
Right. And so one of the really important things that happens every 10 years is we count everyone who lives in our state. and then we use that for the next decade for all sorts of things. And so every time that the census comes, we have to make sure that we are going to be accurately counting everyone who is in our state. And we know that young kids are amongst the most likely to be undercounted or to be missed. And we also know that kids of color are more likely to be missed. And the third category that we're really concerned about is kids and families who live in rural areas because of the particular challenges that this new census is going to provide, because so much of it is going to be done online, and internet access, as we know, can be patchy in parts of our state. So we're really concerned about that. And so we have a little bit of time. It's happening in 2020, but we have to do the work now to make sure that it's effective when it occurs.
You just made internet access a political and maybe even a constitutional issue.
Yes. This is the first time that the internet is the primary means for using the census. It's always been a mail and in-person process in the past. And so there will be backups to the internet process, but the online process is the primary means that the census forms will be filled out. And when you look at the level of access, the northern tier of our state in our rural areas up north have really spotty access. And then when you add sort of the economics on top of that, then you can begin to see who's likely to be missed in that scenario, and that's very troubling for all of us.
We are talking about the Kids Count survey that came out a few weeks ago. Ken Taylor is the executive director of Kids Forward, and we're taking your calls, 800-642-1234. Lori from Vernon County, welcome to the program.
Yes, thank you. Thank you for the show. I have a whole bunch more questions since I called in, but my first one is about the health access for children. What do you expect, any changes now that Badger Care has implementing the work requirements or training requirements? And also, I think CHIP money is also in danger. So even if the children aren't dumped off Badger Care, presumably, you know, if the parents are, a lot of times the paperwork just doesn't flow, and attrition is part of it, which also probably comes into your not counting kids as well. But I'm also wondering if you could look back 20 years when the work requirements were made for assistance, and cash assistance was eliminated through AFDC. One of the things they said about that was that that children would be better off if they saw their mother working rather than in the home. So I'm wondering if we could look at, because poverty is you know, it tends to be higher for kids in single parent families. How much of that might be due to just not having a parent in the home? If your kid's sick at school, it becomes a crisis if you have to go pick them up if you're working. So I'm wondering if anyone's ever kind of separated that. So
excellent questions, Lori. Thank you very much for calling us. Ken Taylor, Badger Care and the work requirements and how that is going to affect kids. Also, CHIP money may be going away.
Right. So I think Lori is right to be concerned around the Badger Care and the work requirements. And we'll see what happens. There's a federal waiver that's being requested, and that's being caught up in various things. And so we don't know exactly what's coming down on that. But the concern that Lori has is very real, because what we know is that when parents lose eligibility, even if their kids retain eligibility, oftentimes the kids fall off the program as well. Sometimes that's not clear to the parents that just because they've lost it, it's their kids remain. And then there's all sorts of other barriers to that. And so we know that when we put these work requirements on programs, it doesn't just affect the parent. It affects the entire family. And often the kid, even if he or she is eligible, falls off the program. So not only is the parent less likely to provide because they don't have the support they need and the health care they need to support their family, but their kid also often falls off the program. When it comes to CHIP, that's one of the federal funding sources for the palliative care program. And the good news is that that's actually been renewed for 10 years at the federal level. And so in all of the healthcare concerns that we have, and there are many, thankfully CHIP is not one of them because that has been renewed. You know, on the third point around, supporting folks in the workforce and what that means, you know, there's no question that it is challenging to be a single parent. One of the deals that was struck 20 years ago, with Tommy Thompson and welfare reform is this exchange of work that they knew would be relatively low wage and supports for parents while they work. And so I think that there's a lot of debate and discussion about parental time and parents in the home. But the reality is that 3/4 of kids have all of their available parents in the workforce. And that's low-income folks, that's middle-income folks, that's high-income folks.
Right.
So that's the reality of Wisconsin, and that's a higher proportion than other states. As I said earlier, Wisconsinites are hard-working folks, and those who are working hard at low wages need some support in order to continue to do that, and that's what the deal was.
And support in terms of childcare, subsidized childcare, so that they can go to work without leaving their 5-year-old at home with their 2-year-old.
Right, and we know, so there's those sorts of child safety issues, but as I was saying earlier, it's not just keeping kids safe. They are, those first 5 years are incredibly important to their brain development. We know more and more and more about the brains that are literally being wired, a million neuron connections a second. I mean, it's really astounding what's going on in those kids' brains. And so not only do we need to keep them safe and happy and secure, this is the opportunity to wire their brains positively and to really set them up for future success, which then will set us up, all of us up, for future success.
We are talking to Ken Taylor of Kids Forward. We're talking about the Annie Casey Foundation's Kids Count annual census that measures how well kids are doing. Wisconsin is actually doing pretty well in regards to the rest of the country. We're 12th, but Ken Taylor is worried that we may not be able to keep that up. Give us a call, 800-642-1234. You can also email ideas at WPR.org. Jill from Rhinelander, welcome to the program.
Hi.
Hi. What's your question or comment?
I just wanted to comment. I needed some help when my daughter was young and received it to get us through. She is now in her 40s. She's a teacher in her community, as her husband is also. They are really great members of the community that everyone respects and admires. The children are, basically the future, and if we don't do the right thing by them and assist parents, we're really going to be in trouble, more trouble than we are now. And I'm really concerned because I think this administration is mean-spirited and not looking to the future. I think they're looking for short-term gain, and we need new leadership in Wisconsin.
Thank you for that, Jill. So there's a mean-spiritedness that I've heard people talk about around the country. Does that play into this, Ken?
Well, I think that it does. But the thing that I would want to focus on with Jill's comments is really this focus on the short-term gain, because we know that we need to invest for long-term success. And for some reason, when businesses talk about it, they know that if they don't invest in their research and development, if they don't continue to try to innovate, they are not going to be successful over the long term. And it's the same with everything. And so I'm really concerned about this short-termism because we know that investing in kids is not only the right thing to do, and as Jill said, she got some help, and now her daughter and son-in-law are teachers and passing that on. And so that's really the model that we need to adopt. And when we don't do that, then we all lose out. So the one thing I would say, on the other point is, the rhetoric that's coming out of Washington, particularly, around immigrant children and families, which oftentimes people don't really think of Wisconsin when we're having that discussion, but they should because they're really important parts of our communities, both rural and urban, huge contributors to our dairy industry. Without immigrants and our dairy industry, we would be in big trouble. And so the rhetoric that's coming out and, the most recent troubling actions around child separation at the border, those kinds of things do have negative long-term implications. And so I think we need to decide if we're really all in this together, which I believe, and the success of everyone is interconnected, or whether we're separating and dividing. And that is a fundamental challenge that we have, and I do think that the most recent rhetoric is a really ugly example of that.
Well, I want to go back to the census for a moment. Undercounting children in Wisconsin, there are federal dollar issues at stake here. There's Head Start money that comes from the federal government, food stamp money that comes from the federal government, Medicaid money that comes from the federal government, foster care assistance, and so on. How much of a hit will Wisconsin take if people in rural communities who don't have access to broadband and people in poorer communities, African-American people, are undercounted?
Yeah, so that's a great question. So there are roughly $9 billion that Wisconsin gets in federal funding that is based on the census. The big ones are around health and around foster care and about child care. And so one of the national think tanks did a study, and it found out, it estimated just for those three funding sources, that for every person that was undercounted, Wisconsin would lose nearly $1,400 a year.
Mm.
And so what that means is that for every 750 people that we miss, we're going to lose $1 million each year for the next 10 years. So that means that we miss 750 people, we lose $10 million over 10 years. And so that has significant negative repercussions for us as a state and for our state budget. One of the projects of Kids Forward is the Wisconsin Budget Project. And so that's a project that looks very closely at both the federal and state budget. And so we pay very close attention to these sorts of things. And that could have very dire consequences. And that's on top of other challenges that we have. So as a state, we've chosen not to take advantage of the tools within the Affordable Care Act. That's costing us over $100 million a year. We are a state that sends more money to Washington than we bring back, and so we can't afford to continue to do that. And so that's one of the reasons why we're really concerned about the undercount. The other thing around the undercount is it's just so fundamental to our democracy. So the number of federal representatives that we have in D.C., in the House of Representatives, is dependent on our count when it comes to the census. And states lose or gain seats in Congress based on the population that is counted. So we have 8 representatives in the House of Representatives, but that's not a guarantee. And so if we don't count accurately, we could lose out. And that's just fundamental to our democratic system.
And what about planning? What about future planning for infrastructure and services and investment and all that kind of stuff? We need to know who's there, right?
We do. And that it's just fundamental to spend our money, not only to get the money that we deserve as a state, but to spend that money wisely and to plan effectively. And so the fact that we're at risk of not doing that means that the precious money that we do have might be spent in the wrong places for the wrong things because we just don't have the information that we need to do that well. And I will also admit that organizations like Kids Forward are really dependent on this kind of information to do our work. So, government, state, local, county, all sorts of folks rely on this. And then, lots of nonprofit organizations, United Ways, community action agencies, all sorts of folks rely on this information to guide their work. And so it has potentially very negative ripple effects throughout everyone who's trying to support our communities.
We are talking about the Kids Count Report from the Annie Casey Foundation, and we're taking your calls, 800-642-1234. Lori in Madison called to say that she's concerned most about daycare and education and health care issues that fall to mothers. Mothers, I'm assuming, having to take off work to take care of their kids. She thinks kids benefit when we make an effort to bring fathers along and encourage them to support, to be part of their children's emotional and physical support. This goes to the community and family part of your report, right?
Exactly. And I agree that, having fathers involved is really important. And when dads aren't involved, that there's additional work that falls to moms. Often, the moms would say, even when the dads are involved, there's additional folks falling to moms. And I couldn't and wouldn't disagree with that either. So we know that raising kids is a hard job. And the more support you have, the not necessarily easier it is, but the
more the burden is spread.
Yeah, spreading the burden, and that also goes to multi-generational families, right? So oftentimes in our world, we're talking about two-generation strategies. So how do we support kids in the context of their families? Because we know that kids don't live in a vacuum, and that their families, however they're configured, whether it's one parent, whether it's two parents, whether it's a same sex couple who is raising families, whether it's a multi-generational family. So really, I'm increasingly thinking about three-generation approaches because we know, there's a lot of discussion about sort of middle generations who are taking care of kids and taking care of parents. And so whatever the configuration is, we need to figure out how to get the most support because kids need support.
We are talking to Ken Taylor, the executive director of Kids Forward, and we're talking about the Kids Count report that came out a few weeks ago. We're also taking your calls, 800-642-1234. We'll be back in a moment. It's the Morning Show on the Ideas Network. I'm Carrie Kaufman. The annual Kids Count survey is out. Wisconsin is number 12, but our guest worries that not every kid may be counted. We're taking your calls on this, 800-642-1234. Ideas at WPR.org is the email address. Are you a parent who is struggling to raise your kids and work? Are you getting enough daycare? Are your kids did your kids get into a good preschool program, or were you not able to afford one? Give us a call, 800-642-1234. So, Ken Taylor, how does... In Wisconsin, children are cared for in terms of you were just talking about multi-generational families. In rural areas, there's not a whole lot of multi-generational families that are necessarily there to take care of the kids.
Yeah, and also one of the challenges is that increasingly there's less and less child care available in rural areas as well. Mm. So you can imagine that, you know, people are traveling great distances, and when the funding, you know, has dried up. So we're investing $100 million less a year in subsidized child care now.
Since when?
As we were. We is the state of Wisconsin.
And since when? Since when have we been investing so much less in child care?
So that's looking back about a decade. And so, as I said earlier, our payment rates have been frozen for nearly a decade. And so we've seen a downward trend both in the number of kids being served and then holding flat on the rates, which then makes it really difficult for child care providers to stay in business. And so we've seen, particularly in our least populated counties, dramatic declines in the child care that's available, and that doesn't affect just those who are receiving public support for that. That affects everyone. There's a story that a colleague told me not that long ago about a rural hospital that recruited two doctors, a couple, a mom and a dad who had two kids, and they were going to come and work at this rural hospital, but they couldn't find child care at any price. It didn't exist in that area. And so that hospital lost those two doctors as potential employees because they couldn't find child care. And so we've seen in some of our rural counties declines of 80%. Mm-hmm. And so that has huge implications for people's ability to work. So not only, you know, we've been talking a lot about the brain development and the positive long-term implications for the kids. But if you think about parents as employees, and, you know, we're in a economy that needs employees, but if parents can't find childcare, they can't work. Or they find substandard childcare, or they piece it together, and then they're not as good employees, because we know that when kids are in safe, stable, high-quality places, that parents worry less when they're at work, and then are better employees and do a better job when their kids are in those high-quality places. When they're not, things happen and parents worry appropriately, and often have to leave work in order to address those sorts of things. So there's the long-term positive impacts for the kids, but there's the immediate impacts on the parents and on the employers who are looking for workers.
So, Ken, it seems to me that what you're saying is that Wisconsin used to be like the gold standard for kids, and we've been slacking off on that. What can we do to move up to be the gold standard again?
Well, I think that we need to talk more about it. And so I appreciate being on the program, because if people aren't aware that this is a challenge that we face as a state, they're not going to focus on it. And so I think that you know, people who are listening and people across the state need to be asking that question of those who represent them, those who are running for public office, your school board members, your school administrators, the of everyone around, well, what are we doing to invest in our future? What are we doing to support our kids? Because our future really does depend on it. And so the fact that that we are falling behind many of our peers, the fact that we used to be, as you said, I mean, there's always been challenges. The racial inequities that I described earlier didn't happen overnight, right? So they've been there. So it's not that the past was great in all in all ways, right? So I think that's important to acknowledge. But we're not going to improve on that. We're not going to address those challenges in the way that we're doing now by disinvesting in our kids. And we've seen that in early learning. We've seen that in K-12. We've seen that in health. And we see as the economy is beginning to rebound that it's rebounding for those at the top. But wages aren't going up for people at the bottom. Minimum wage is locked in. And so the fact that, supposedly the poverty that the economy is improving, but the poverty rate is remaining roughly the same, means that we're not headed in the right direction on that, and we need to take action now.
So, Ken, Wisconsin actually accepted the Medicare expansion, right?
We did not. No,
we did not. Okay.
No. So we're one of the states that did not.
So, how is that affecting, especially the health care of our kids?
Well, in two ways. One, as I said earlier, the states who accepted it have been driving their uninsured rates down, and ours has been holding steady. And the other way that it affects it is that we are choosing not to take about $140 million per year in federal funding to support our healthcare system. So that means that we now have to spend more to maintain where we are, and then we have $140 million less per year to spend on other things. So we're doing that, and at the same time, we're giving big tax breaks to well-connected industries and others. So we say, we often hear, well, we'd love to invest more, but we don't have any money. I reject that. We're choosing to not take the federal money that we're sending to Washington. We're choosing to give tax breaks to industry and choosing not to invest in our kids. I think that's the wrong choice.
We are talking about the Kids Count report that came out a few weeks ago, and we're taking your calls, 800-642-1234. You can also email us at ideas@wpr.org. Ken, I want to talk about New York. When de Blasio became mayor of New York, one of the things he promised was child care, free child care, subsidized child care. How has he done with that, and what have you in the kids community learned from that?
Yeah, so that announcement, was to a lot of national news, and it turns out that it's challenging to do, both from a funding perspective and from a capacity perspective, and those two things are related because childcare providers, actually get paid very little. As I said earlier, many of them are on, are paid so little that they, receive public support, food support, and other things. And in a very high cost place like New York, that's only exacerbated. So I think that the some of the lessons, and I'm actually, speaking with colleagues from around the country today about these sorts of things, is that is absolutely the right thing to do, and many places are nowhere near that. But because again, it has both, short-term impacts. It affects the parents as workers and their employers, So it has a positive, almost immediate economic impact in that way. It has short-term impacts on the kids, decreases the need for special education and things like that, and then is an investment in our future workforce. So it's the right thing to do. It is challenging to build a system that's high quality, that's universal, and so that's going to take some time. But that's what we need, and that's what most affluent developed countries have already, and we are very much behind the rest of the world in that.
So if the issue is that we're not paying child care, especially early child development workers, more, why don't we work that into paying them more when we're talking about these programs?
Yeah, well, we absolutely should. And we've been advocating that along with our colleagues around the state and around the country. That's one of the primary advocacy goals that we have, and our Early Learning Coalition and Wisconsin Early Care Association and SFTA and other groups that we are working with. That's one of the fundamental goals, is to actually have these jobs be family supporting jobs for the workers themselves. And so imagine being a child care provider who's worried about how you're going to feed your own child.
Mm-hmm.
That's going to affect how you take care of other people's kids, right? And so it's absolutely the right thing to do. The fact that rates have been frozen means that that child care providers are really struggling, and we know that higher quality care actually costs more money to provide, and it's very well much worth it. And so the science is incredibly clear. The economic impact is incredibly clear. We've had study after study. We have experts at the university, Catherine Magnuson and others, at the University of Wisconsin. We've had people from the Federal Reserve. The science and the research could not be clearer. We just have to choose to act on it. And at this point, we're choosing not to.
I've got a note here. Wisconsin did not expand Medicaid under Obamacare. The state did do partial expansion, helping adults up to 100% of the federal poverty line, but is not going the full 133% expansion under the Affordable Care Act. Is that correct?
That is correct. But in order to do that expansion for childless adults, they needed to cut BadgerCare for adults with kids over the poverty line. So while that is true, and we did expand so that we don't have a gap in the program as many states do, we did that by cutting other people who were on the program off the program. And the other thing that I think that's an important thing to emphasize right now is that we said that we can do that because we have a strong private marketplace. And we're very concerned, and our analysis is showing that the sabotage that's going on in the marketplace that we're relying on for those people over 100% of poverty will have negative impacts on their health care.
Sabotaging marketplace. That you just left me with something that I want to follow up on in a future show about insurance. Ken Taylor is the executive director of Kids Forward, and he's been talking to us today about the Kids Count report. Thanks for being with us, Ken.
Thank you. I appreciate your interest in the kids of Wisconsin.
The Morning Show is produced by Colleen Leahy, Brianne Shasso, Chris Molina, Laura Pavin, and Sarah Hopeful. Michael Derringer is our technical director. Keely Bultina is the executive producer, and I'm Carrie Kaufman.